This year marks the 500th anniversary of the beginning of the Protestant Reformation. It was 500 years ago, this past October 31st, that Martin Luther would go against the grain and challenge the views and practices of the Catholic Church by hammering what was called the 95 Theses on the door of his local church in Wittenberg. Now, he did this in order to start a conversation about some of the things that were going on in the church and how they were not exactly lined up with the Bible. You see, he studied scripture and he compared scripture to what was going on in the church at the time, and he realized that something just wasn't right. The church wasn't lining up with the Bible, and as a result, he dared to wonder, what if it could be better? Now, you fast forward to now in the current status of education, and I think we are at a similar moment. I think that we definitely need to be asking some tough questions. Now, don't get me wrong. There are great things being done around the country. There are awesome things done around the country, and we definitely magnify those things, and we celebrate the students who are doing amazing things. We're seeing some amazing success. But we still have the persistence of what is called the achievement gap. And so we want more students to be able to chase their vision of success. We want to continue to grow and make better decisions so that all students have an equal chance to succeed. And definitely the road to success, that begins with a solid education. So we want more. We want better. What does that look like? You know, perhaps it's so amazing that we can't even begin to imagine it. But what if we dared to dream? What if we dared to take a risk? What if we dared to bet on students? I know we have standardized tests that we have to take. The state says that we have to take it. The feds say we have to take it. But what if it could be better? Yes, it's going to take courageous people with the spirit of Martin Luther to lead the charge and continue to ask the question, what if it could be better? And if it could be better, we have an obligation to do whatever it takes to make it better for our students. This is the Marvin Byrd Show. So glad that you're listening. I'm your host, Dr. Marvin Byrd. And today's show is simply going to center around that question, what if it could be better? That's what Martin Luther was challenging people to ponder. He encouraged the debate. Let's talk about it. Let's go back and forth about it. Because ultimately what Martin Luther was trying to do is he was trying to change the way that people thought. And that's what education is about. That's what we're trying to get students to do. But we also need policymakers and people in administration to think differently as well. You know, I'm reminded that we had the publication of A Nation at Risk talking about some of the negative trends in education. Then, I think it was another 25 years later, A Nation Still at Risk was published, I believe. And what do you think's going to happen, say, 25 years from then? Are we going to be publishing something with a similar title? Or what if it could be better? What if we could do something different that changes the outcome of this 25 years? Now, I truly believe that it's very difficult to make projections about other schools based on third-party research. I mean, I think each situation is different. Just because a best practice works at one school doesn't mean it's going to work at another school. And so it takes people who are really willing to dig into these issues and study their particular students to find out what's actually going to work for them. And so there's a few universal things that apply to all schools. Now, one of those things is definitely all students can learn, right? That's one of the universal things. But sadly, one of the other universals that we do know is that socioeconomic status is still a factor in academic success of students. Now, I want to share with you some information that I found from the American Psychological Association, and I'll make sure that I put this out on my Twitter feed. That's at Marvin Bird, and then we'll put it out on the brand's Facebook page. That is Facebook/MarvinBird.edu. I'll make this information available to you, but let me share a little bit of this with you as you hear the rumbling of the paper. It begins by saying that socioeconomic status, SES, encompasses not just income, but also educational attainment, financial security, and subjective perceptions of social status and social class. And so this, which we also call SES, is still a factor, and that's not a good thing. Because students, they don't have a choice in what situation they are born into. Now, let me read to you some of the other things that I just found interesting from this information. It says, children from low SES families are less likely to have experiences that encourage development of fundamental skills of reading acquisition, such as phonological awareness, vocabulary, and oral language. And as we know, ladies and gentlemen, that is the foundation. That is, reading is the foundation. It's a foundation to acquiring knowledge. Additionally, I found this interesting. It said that those from higher social class backgrounds tend to be more successful in developing career aspirations and are generally better prepared for the world of work because of access to resources such as career offices, guidance counselors, better schools. And this is what I found very interesting. And high-level social actors and familial experience with higher education. Very, very interesting. So they have very influential people in their lives pushing them to chase their vision of success. Now, one more thing I'll read to you. And again, I'll make this available to you. But here we go. Okay. I want to highlight this one for you. It said, children from low SES families enter high school with average literacy skills 5 years behind those of high-income students. My goodness. My goodness. And you know, as I just thinking about that now, I'm just, you know, wow. That's unbelievable. It's just really hard to fathom. I mean, you wonder what goes through the minds of those students when they realize that I can't do this. I can't do this assignment you've given me because I'm so far behind on my reading. Oh, it's just so sad. Again, it's just students have no control over this. And you know, ladies and gentlemen, we have to face the truth. We've been spending money. We've been spending money to alleviate the negative effects of poverty. We have been. We've increased our spending significantly, but we're still searching. We're still searching for more solutions to this challenge that we face. The situation that you were born into should not affect your outcome, your academic success. So, and I want to give you a disclaimer. I'm not about pumping up, you know, special interest groups and whatnot. This organization does submit ideas and possible solutions, but it's not anything out of the ordinary that we have not heard before. And that's not a knock on them. That just goes to highlight how difficult this work is. And we can't have stagnant thinking if we're going to help these students and their families. And so I believe that we got far too many politicians and people with just the political mindset in charge of making these decisions in education. And that's not attacking them, but sometimes I'm certain that it happens without even thinking about it. People are making political decisions because that's the system. That's what they've known. But it takes people who are courageous, like Martin Luther, and I want to encourage those people to start asking that question. What if it could be better. And we need these kinds of people in place in schools around the country, because again, solutions that work in one place, that doesn't guarantee they'll work in another place. And so it takes people within the school or school district thinking about their unique situation and coming up with unique solutions. And they may look crazy to someone in another school district, in another state. It doesn't matter. As long as it's working and it's meeting the needs of your students, that should be more than enough. And you know why? I haven't looked at the data, but I'm certain we have the people in place to do this. We have more advanced degrees in public education than we ever have. I believe it. I've not looked up that data, but I believe it's so. We have more people with advanced degrees working in public education. We can do this. In many instances, this is about saving people's lives. Making sure that students have multiple doors of opportunity available to them when they graduate. Don't forget, what happens to a dream deferred? So I'm going to give you my 5 theses. Martin Luther was about trying to get people to think differently. And the most successful people in this world were people who could think differently, who could see things that were never in existence before, such as the Wright brothers. What is a plane? I don't know, but I want to build one. That's why I do the work that I do. I became a teacher because I wanted to help break the cycle of poverty that exists in the lives of many students around this country and quite possibly around the world. And so now I'm going to tell you about my 5 theses. But before I get to my 5 theses, I want to tell you about the Vision Chasers YouTube channel. The Vision Chasers YouTube channel you can find at YouTube/TheVisionChasers. And on that channel, what I have is I have very brief motivational videos for students. I started that channel because throughout the years, me encouraging students to say, hey, you should write a book. And so I did that. It's called Make It Plain: Keys to Being a Successful High School Student. But I also made this YouTube channel as well, just to give them, quick words of encouragement as they go travel to their vision of success. And so I want to encourage you to check that out. Again, that's YouTube/TheVisionChasers. And if you just take a little bit more time, please do subscribe to the channel as well, because we want to make sure that we get that message out to as many people as possible. So again, that's YouTube/TheVisionChasers. I promise you, you will like it. So the videos are less than 3 minutes. Doesn't take very long to get through it. And so I thank you for your time with that. Okay, so now, here are my 5 theses. I'm going to be Martin Luther. That's my hammer. That's my hammer. So here we go. So I've got some ideas. Martin Luther had some ideas. I've got some ideas. Okay. So my goal here is to get you to just think a little bit differently. So I'm wondering, what if it could be better? What if it could be better? Here are some ideas I submit to you. So for my first thesis, I'd like to give a shout out to Dr. Jeff Butts on Twitter. He is at Wayne TWP Super. He's a superintendent in Indianapolis. And he, not too long ago, he shared an article about something that they're kicking around in Indiana. And it's just really interesting. And I will, I'll link to this. This will be on my Twitter, and it'll be in my Twitter feed as well as the Facebook page. Again, that's Facebook/MarvinBird EDU and at Marvin Bird. So this is from the Indy Star, IndyStar.com. Here's a title, and this is by Arika Haran. I hope I got that name right. And the title is "A Welding Certificate or After-School Job Could Become a High School Graduation Requirement." And I'll just let that title speak for itself, and I'll let you go ahead and check it out on the social site. But it's just interesting. So my first thesis is you need to generally care about what happens to students after graduation. High school should not be about an accumulation of credits by any means necessary. A diploma should have a diploma should be a representation of something of value. And I definitely think that schools taking it upon themselves to really make sure that students transition with purpose, as opposed to just simply transition. You walk the stage, here you go, you graduate, and that's it. I definitely think that it's best when schools generally care about what happens to students after graduation and really make sure that students are on the path to success. That's very important. So that's my first thesis. Second, if your data is showing trends, make the necessary adjustments. And again, you'll notice that these are pretty simple. And because they're simple, it shouldn't be too difficult to implement them. So if your data is showing trends, make the necessary adjustments. For example, let's go back to reading. We all know the statistic about, you know, third grade reading scores, about states using third grade reading scores to determine, you know, how much room they'll need in prison. Now, that may be a little extreme, but what we do know is, going back to what the information that I read to you from the American Psychological Association, in that many children from low socioeconomic status families enter high school with average literacy skills of 5 years behind those of high income students. So when you get those third grade reading scores, that tells you everything that you need to know. So there's going to have to be some drastic adjustments taking place. And we've just got to get out of, you know, best practices are good, but I think, like anything else, you take what you need. Just like with teachers, you know, as teachers, we don't use whole lesson plans 100% that someone else made. You've got to put your own spin on it. You've got to make it your own. You've got to adjust it so that it works for the students that you serve. And so I think it takes big thinking in terms of looking at these trends and in terms of making these projections so that you can make the necessary adjustments. So it takes big thinking. It takes someone, this is going to possibly change the way school looks. Perhaps it means taking a risk, because you definitely don't want students entering high school 5 grades behind on their reading level. Number three, question. Why do we continue to think of education as linear? Why do we insist the process look the same for every student? Ann Sullivan was the teacher of Helen Keller. Now, Helen Keller was a very iconic individual in American history. Her story of persistence and perseverance is what America is all about. But as a child, as a teenager, she was difficult. She was difficult to work with. Her parents brought in a teacher, Ann Sullivan, to work with her, to teach her. And when Ann Sullivan was in the early stages of working with Helen Keller, she found it difficult to teach because Helen lacked discipline. And Ann Sullivan realized that she was not going to be able to get anything to stick. Helen Keller was not going to be able to acquire knowledge if she continued to lack discipline. And I know that many of you right now can think of that kind of student, a student in that situation. It was a great kid. You love him and you just want the best for him. You want him to make good decisions, but it's his decision making. He or she lacks discipline. And so they find themselves in the principal's office, ISS, OSS. And so it's difficult for them to acquire knowledge because of a lack of discipline. Now, I know we've got the whole rethink discipline movement, and many schools are doing away with OSS and ISS, and that's good. But those efforts are fruitless if you don't have that reflection piece. If students are not able to think about their actions or think about their poor choices, to really reflect and have that process of the mind where they're starting to think differently, then change will never occur. And so that's what Ann Sullivan did with Helen Keller. She Now, it was physical at times, and definitely we do not, you know, we don't condone that. But ultimately, Ann Sullivan knew that she had to get Helen Keller to reflect on her lack of discipline and her poor decision-making before learning could take place. Now, at the time, Ann Sullivan, she had the benefit of not having, oh, I've got my pacing guide, I've got to be here by November, I've got to be here by January, because it wasn't so linear. She had the time to help Helen Keller reflect, learn, and make better decisions. And then learning can take place. Learning of content can take place. So education, I don't think it needs to be linear. We don't have to just follow our pacing guide and let that be that. We need to give students what they need. Next up, my fourth thesis. Do you realize, this is, I think these are 2016 projections. The NFL made $13 billion. $13 billion. Major League Baseball made $9 billion. And the NBA made $8 billion. Billion dollars. Billion dollars. We need to pay teachers more. We need to pay teachers more. I know, you know, I've heard it a lot of times when I talk with people. They say, oh, when they learn what I do for a living, they say, oh, you know what, teachers, they need to be paid more and need to be paid more. Well, it's about time that America put its money where its mouth is. So I love baseball. The Cardinals are my favorite team. Baseball is my favorite sport. Not so much an NFL fan after the NFL did us wrong when they relocated the St. Louis Rams to Los Angeles. And I've been a Knicks fan since 94, so the NBA, there's not too much going on in the NBA for me. But these entities make a lot of money. And so here's what I think for my fourth thesis. There's a lot of money out there. There's a lot of money out there. And right now, the House and the Senate and the President, they're talking about tax reform. Well, I've got some tax reform for you. There should be, on your taxes, there should be the option of allocating a certain percentage of your taxes to go to education. And not to education in general, but it should specifically go to the salaries of teachers. What do you think about that? So taxpayers, when they get their taxes, they, you know, of course, they're going to end up owing so much, you know, but the taxpayer gets a say in where their tax dollars should go for a certain percentage, right? Because the government, the government has to have some say in how the money is spent. But there's a certain percentage that we, the taxpayer, can say, hey, we want this certain percentage of what we owe in taxes to go to education, specifically teacher salaries. Now, how that money is allocated, well, you know, we can leave that open for debate. Like, should it be people within a state? They get to allocate money to either their local district, or should it go to a pool that the state decides where, you know, the money should go? Should it be based on need, or should it be a federal thing? Should the federal government be in charge of it? Now, definitely that part is open for debate, but at least we have more money going into a pool for teachers' salaries. There's a lot of money floating around there, and it's about time that we started to really show teachers that they are valued for the things that they do, for the important work that they are doing, investing in our future. Now, let me get into a couple other things with this. This money, again, it cannot be used for anything else. There can't be any tricks, no lawyer tricks or anything like that to move money from this teacher salary pool. No tricks. So all of this money goes to the salaries for teachers. And this can't be used for anything else. It's audited yearly and definitely jail time for anyone who misuses a penny of this money. Jail time. I mean it. Okay, so on to my fifth thesis. Ladies and gentlemen, big school districts challenge the community's ability to remain in an active partnership. Now, I'm not sure on the cap, because I can imagine that it would vary from one district or one community to another, but we've got to break up some of these larger districts. Because the bigger the organization, the more likely you are going to have a bureaucracy in place. And bureaucracies, as we know, they exist to make sure that the bureaucracy remains in existence. Now, I don't think it's an intentional thing, but that's just the way it works. I don't think you have evil people in big school districts thinking, you know, no, we want to hold students down. We don't want student achievement. I don't think that that's what's going on, but I just think that somehow, some way, you know, innovative thinking is just, it's impaired. It's impaired because I just think it's just natural that the, you know, people who are working in the bureaucracy, they live to make sure that the bureaucracy is, that it's sustained. And so doing the right thing, it's difficult. It's not so much black and white, but we need to get back to doing the right thing instead of trying to make things look right. That's that political mindset I was talking about. And we don't need that. That doesn't change lives. That doesn't improve things. That only hinders growth. And I'm going to add a bonus one here. This is a bonus. I'd already laid out my notes for this episode, but I traveled and I want to add this here because I went to San Francisco recently for the NCSS conference and I was in an airport and I went to a Burger King and for myself, I bought a meal. The price of the meal was $25. Now that's ridiculous. That's ridiculous. And I was thinking, how in the world is this legal? Why do we accept paying above market price at airports, sporting events, and movie theaters? This is insane. This is insane that it's legal. This is illegal. And you know what I looked up, ladies and gentlemen? I think it was India. In India, they have outlawed this practice. They have outlawed this practice of jacking up the prices at, you know, sporting events and movie theaters. This is not right. But here's my proposal. Because if they want to continue with these prices, this is what I propose. And there's nothing stopping states from doing this. Number one, definitely you make this practice illegal, but you can also do something like this. For everything, let's say a small soda, that'll probably run you $6 at a movie theater. And let's say the market price of it, of a small soda is, a small fountain drink is probably, let's say 80 cents, okay? 80 cents. Okay, so the movie theater is selling it for $6. You know what? Yeah. Movie theater is selling it for $6. So, I mean, look, that is ridiculous. So here's the deal. We go to the movie theater and say, okay, the market price says that a small soda is 80 cents. You're selling it for $6. Okay, so what we're going to do is you can sell it for $6, but the market price says it's 80 cents. So anything over 80 cents that you charge, that's going to go to teacher salaries. And so now what this does is this gives movie theaters, sporting events, and airports, this gives them something. It gives them the opportunity to say, hey, we know our prices are high, but we're helping out teachers. We're helping out paying teachers' salaries and giving them the increase that we believe they should have because of the important work that they do. How about that? I love that. I'm gonna hammer that multiple times on the door because I think that is an outstanding idea. So I want to hear what you think. I want to hear what you think about these things. I want to hear what are some of your ideas about how we can impact the lives of students, how we can change education for the better by employing some different, a different way of looking at it, a different kind of thinking. And so you can share them with me on our Facebook page. That's Marvin Bird. That's Facebook/MarvinBirdEDU. And also hit me up on Twitter. That's at Marvin Bird. I want to hear your ideas. Let's get those out there, and perhaps we can get other people to start thinking differently, because that's what we need. And so in closing, I want to encourage you to be bold, respectfully submit your ideas to those who are the decision makers, and invite other people to wonder, what if it could be better? I'm Marvin Bird. Thank you so much for listening. Bye.